Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. So here we are again, Scott, episode 33. We are like officially one third of the way to episode 100.
Sort of. We just got to round up a little bit when we get to the end there. We need to be at like 33.333333333. It's like a really weird SLA.
So does that mean since this is 30 minutes, about 10 minutes in, we'll be one third of the way there?
There you go.
All right.
We'll let you play the horn or the bells or whatever you want to do at that time.
I need to find a way to add some sound effects. I listened to the one last week with your sound effect and going back in time. We need to figure out a way to play some sound effects.
I think it's off to Amazon. We just get one of those big buttons, you know?
There you go. That sounds good.
Kind of like Staples, the easy button, except it'll be inappropriate sound effects for podcasts. TM.
All right. Anyways, we probably don't want to talk about sound effects and all of that the whole time. What do we want to talk about today?
We are going to dive into some other news-ish kind of stuff. So last episode, we kind of did the big, just covering the news and everything that's going on, and felt like there was a number of things that were left out of that conversation. So there was a lot of information that came out, particularly around SharePoint, both pre and post Ignite, and wanted to kind of walk through some of that. And, you know, quite a bit of it was, they also took deeper dives at Ignite. So kind of walk through some of those, talk about what those features are and what they mean to everybody.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that came out of Ignite. I know, unfortunately, you weren't able to join me for the SharePoint OneDrive session with Teeper and Dan Holm. You were doing an interview and you graciously let me attend that session. There was a lot of stuff that they covered in that 75 minutes.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's hard to cram that stuff in, but they've gotten much better at it over the years. And it is a whole lot to get out there, especially from a marketing side to push through. So why don't we hop right in and start talking about some of these?
All right. Do you have a favorite you want to start with or you want me to start?
We can start just right at the top in the notes here. So attention views.
Attention views. So these are interesting. There's a few of these announcements that are kind of like this, where it's announcements that, hey, you used to be able to do this in the classic UI. You can't do it in the modern UI. So now it's a new feature that you can do it in the modern UI. I haven't seen yet quite how this is going to be implemented, but essentially this lets you take some of that metadata, maybe it's required fields that are missing information, or whether you just want to format the fields, almost like a KPI, if you want to do different colors based on things. Essentially, this allows you to create views that you can highlight certain items in that view based on criteria. So I know you used to be able to do some of this. I can't remember which field it was, calculated fields. I think you could kind of do some of this with before. And now, again, we're going to have that attention views. We're going to kind of have that way to highlight different fields, different lists, or different items in a list. I haven't gotten it in my tenant yet. I think it's coming out any day now, early October, to first release customers. So some of you may have it, some of you may not. I'm kind of curious to see how this is implemented and how you actually create them.
So they had a few sessions on it. It's a little bit different than what's there in Classic View today. So when you talk about Classic View and being able to flag things through and color code them like that, typically you'd be using a calculated column, like you said, or even maybe a KPI column if you can figure out a way to make it work for you. So lots of folks used to do things like that, I think, with HTML calculated fields. So you could put HTML straight in a calculated column, have it come out and be rendered in a list view, right? Great for red, green, yellow kind of scenarios for KPIs or flagging certain things. But that would flag at the item level. So this can flag at the column level what's happening within a particular area. So if you think about having a list that might have a bunch of required metadata, so maybe you're getting started in that business process and you haven't trained everybody that they need to upload their documents through SharePoint, or maybe you have those people who stick around and say, okay, you know I should do this through SharePoint, but I'm still going to upload it through my OneDrive client, right? Where it doesn't support those metadata features and check in, check out, and all that kind of stuff. So what this lets you do is, as a content curator, so say you own that business process, or, you know, if you wanted to integrate it into your user training, you can have a place for the users to go say, bring me up just one sheet, like a data sheet view, and let's go ahead and color code specific columns that might be required or missing just based on how the data was entered into our list or library. So it'll be really good for structured business process kinds of things where you need well-defined inputs to have a great output, right? But if it's just a regular old document-driven OneDrive upload kind of process, it's still going to be all janky and weird and broken.
I'm curious to get it. I know I have some clients that are excited about it too because they very much have that problem. I feel like required metadata is the one big one here because they have that problem all the time where they're missing metadata. So they would love to get their hands on this feature.
You know, we always talk about it's kind of people, process, technology, right? So things like required metadata are a process and a people problem. They're not a technology thing because you're going to point people into the right technology. So if you do have required metadata, well, how do we set it up in a way so that users are going to be able to easily enter it, right? So we always talk about like, hey, you shouldn't use folders in SharePoint. Well, folders can actually be really awesome if you want to apply default metadata at a folder level. You might not have to show it to your users because, hey, we can collapse folders out in a view and all that good stuff. But you've really got to think and plan and say, once this process goes live, what is our kind of contract with the user community and how do we want them to use it so that we can drive them into that behavior? Like if you do have those required metadata scenarios, users can't be using tooling like OneDrive, right? They have to be going to the SharePoint site and uploading through SharePoint. And in some cases, you might not even want them bulk uploading, right? You might want them doing single file uploads. So you're going to have to provide that guidance and get them to where you want them to be so that they can be successful with whatever that process happens to be.
Yep. Absolutely. So the next one on our list, security and compliance updates. There were a bunch of them around this topic as well.
Just a few.
So we'll kind of break this out. There's a couple of them that are kind of more of a, well, I say high level. We could dive into them in a lot of detail. There's a blog post out there that we'll link to in the show notes that kind of gives you an overview. And then we'll probably have some additional links in the show notes that dive into some of those topics in more detail. So this first blog post kind of gives you, it'll give you a rundown of all the updates they made. So one of the big ones that is coming is the multi-geo capabilities of SharePoint and OneDrive. So some of this has already been there, I believe, for Exchange. Now it's coming to SharePoint and OneDrive where different sites, different users' OneDrives, you can specify the location you want them in. So, and think of this not necessarily for performance reasons, but for some of the data sovereignty, the compliance. I think there's some things coming with GDPR where data has to reside in a certain spot. So if you're a global company and you want to specify where your different users' OneDrives are, a lot of those multi-geo capabilities will be coming to SharePoint. So that was one of them. The other one they highlighted was service level encryption keys. Customer keys in Office 365, you can take your own encryption keys now. And then a bunch of things around sharing, additional security stuff around sharing, device access policies, timeout policies, secure external sharing. So are there any of those, Scott, you want to dive into out of that high level and go into a little more detail on?
Yeah, I think it's important to touch on probably the multi-geo stuff. And you also mentioned kind of some of the conditional access policies. I think they've got some exciting things going on there. So multi-geo is super interesting. You mentioned it as kind of a compliance feature and not a performance feature. I would also consider it to be a performance feature depending on where your users are situated and how that all comes to pass. Network connectivity can be
Microsoft
difficult.
Marketing has gotten to me.
It can be difficult in some parts of the world, right?
Yep.
You know, Australia, South America, Africa, things like that. You might actually want to be closer to your data. So yeah, there are absolutely regulatory concerns that go in there. So you mentioned GDPR, so the General Data Protection Regulation, as companies get ready to think about what that means for their business and what happens there. So really what the way this feature works is every user, if you've ever gone through that onboarding flow for a user, say you do directory synchronization, right? So you'll synchronize that user. they're not automatically licensed unless you use that feature of Azure AD or you scripted it out. But one of the things you have to do before you apply an entitlement to a user is set a usage location for them, right? So I can say Ben's in the United States and Scott's in Japan, or however it ends up working out based on your user community and the way your organization is structured. So in the past, that really didn't drive too much. That was just a way to say, hey, my user is not in Iran, so let's not give them access to some features that we can't because, you know, US company and embargoes and all those kinds of things. You can't always push information out where you want to. So now what they're going to let you do is say, based on that usage location, let's actually start to home some of my data closer to users or into a more appropriate data center for their storage, right? Maybe you do have that data sovereignty requirement. So if my usage location is the United States, my OneDrive and my Exchange mailbox will continue to be homed into an existing data center. Say you're at a, like, US Central, right? You're sitting in Des Moines or whatever. And then if you're in Japan, well, you're going to be homed into a Japanese data center. If you're in the UK, you're going to be homed into something, you know, that's on the island with you and kind of ready to go. So you'll be able to define that based on kind of user groups or communities or segments or however you push that out. So maybe you want to keep a bunch of your users in the United States no matter what. And then for these other groups, you want to say, hey, I need your data to be here for whatever reason, right? Performance, compliance, just general goodwill, however that comes into play with it. So I've seen a lot of organizations that, you know, they didn't put a lot of thought into things like setting usage locations for their users. They might be like multinational or multi-geo organizations, and they just said, well, everybody's in the US because I really didn't understand what that switch did. So there might be some work to kind of go back and retool and get people to where they need to be. But, you know, you'll be able to make it happen. I think the other thing everybody needs to recognize with that as well is it should not have impacts really on anything like search. So they've thought about federated search and being able to have local indices within a local data center. So, you know, you're in the US and I'm in Japan. Well, if I'm actually sitting in the US office, I'm still going to be able to search from there and it'll be just fine and performant and return back for me. And I'll still have that kind of unified index and one view of the world and everything that needs to happen there.
It'll be nice. Again, another one of those features that I know people have been asking for. I did find too, it is in private preview today. So if you want to learn more about it, a couple of these blog posts have links. If you want to go sign up and try to get in that private preview, there's some links there, one for OneDrive, one for SharePoint. Again, if you are a multi-geo company and you want to start giving it a try. The other one I like that they announced it, I think they announced this one back in May 4, and it is coming now, or coming very soon now, is that service level encryption key with a customer key in Office 365. So in the past, Microsoft, one of the things I like about them, they've always done a really good job of securing your data, of keeping it encrypted, whether it's in transit, at rest. But in the past, they've always owned the encryption keys. So they use their own keys, they encrypt it all. They don't necessarily have access to those keys, but they're the ones responsible for coming up with those keys. Now for Office 365, they're going to let you take your own key. So you control your own organization's encryption keys. You use within Office 365, you can configure it to encrypt all of your data at rest in Microsoft's data centers using your own keys. You can go in and change these keys anytime you want to. You can revoke these keys anytime you want to. So now the nice thing is you know, if you absolutely want that data to be secure, you don't want to have any concerns about maybe Microsoft being able to see it, or again, just completely securing that data, you can remove your own encryption key now or change it anytime you want to. So there's a bunch of steps around going through, setting it all up, importing it. There's a blog post out here we can link to, but again, Microsoft, I feel like really, that's one thing I feel like they try to focus on maybe even a little bit more than some of the other cloud vendors, comparing it to something like a G Suite, is just really making sure your data is secure. And this is just another step, I feel like, in that direction.
Yeah, so this also comes into play a little bit. There are organizations that have data wipe requirements. So, you know, you might say that, hey, when I get off your system, you need to make sure that disks are shredded and data is actually gone and pulled. So in a multi-tenant service like Office 365, it's really hard to do, right? They're not going to be able to pull a single drive with just your stuff on it, because you know you're not in a dedicated service, you're in this multi-tenant thing. So this empowers customers and users to really control their own destiny. So Microsoft can't get into your data, and then you do have to be careful with this, because you should you revoke a key, it's done and you're done and you're not going to get at your data. Like you said, they did announce this back in May. They had some really good videos on Microsoft Mechanics that walk through what was going on and what was happening in this space. They did have a session at Ignite that walked straight into compliance keys, so everybody can go and kind of check that out and see what's going on there. And then, like you said, they do have an FAQ for it as well. This is one of those features that with great power comes great responsibility. So everybody's going to want to think really hard about what that looks like for them and how they manage it through.
Yeah, definitely. All right, you're up next. Do you want to talk about changes to SharePoint Online pages?
We can.
That one's a quick one.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things that are going on there, right? So this is for pages that run the classic experience, right? So they're walking through and saying that rather than having a document mode tag in the HTML that says, hey, we're going to target IE10, they're going to start targeting edge mode instead. Pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Might have some impacts on you depending on how you've rolled things out, right? Are you an organization that's on Windows 10 and does Edge? Are you an organization that's on Windows 10 and shut off Edge off and you do IE11 with enterprise sites? You know, God forbid, are you still on an organization that does like Windows 7 and IE10 or something like that?
I have a solution. Don't use IE.
I have one too. Just buy Macs for everybody. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is, yeah. Like you said, they're just changing some of those pages, how they're going to be rendered. Hopefully it doesn't impact too many. Well, it'll impact people. I have a client right now dealing with this, and actually in SharePoint 2013, and things working and not working based on edge mode, IE10, all of that. Yeah, pretty basic change. So let's take a break. Get a word in from BitWizards, and we'll be right back. We'd like to thank BitWizards for sponsoring the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast. They've won Florida Trend Magazine's Best Companies to Work For 8 years running and have been a Microsoft Gold Partner since 2001. Nobody loves Azure like BitWizards. BitWizards is looking for talented, like-minded IT pros with a knack for Azure. If you're listening to this podcast, you'd likely be a great fit at BitWizards. Just think, you could be listening to Scott and me on the beach. Go to bitwizards.com/cloudsmith right now to apply.
And we're back. Awesome. So why don't we talk about the new admin center that's getting ready to roll out in preview. I've seen a bunch of people on Twitter saying it's starting to hit their tenants. I think it's hit one of yours. So, you know, hopefully you've had a chance to go in there and play with it a little bit and give us a little bit of a practical spin. This is the SharePoint Admin Center being modernized, kind of modern UI. So it is a little bit more unified than it used to be in the past, in the sense that it actually provides you insights into all of your sites. Should they be regular SharePoint sites or group sites, being able to go through and filter those views and sort, having built-in views for things like inactive sites or sites without a bunch of activity. So you can start to maybe cull data within your environment or think a little bit more about governance. All in all, some really great features that are coming in there.
Yeah, it is. I like where they're going with it. Like you said, I did get access to it in one of my tenants. It is, if you're a typical SharePoint admin, at this point in time, it's still super basic. The big one that they did put in there that everybody has been clamoring for is that site management, like you said. When I first launch it in mine, I actually only have 4 links down the left side. So I get home, I get site management, I get the recycle bin, and I have settings. That home gives me a message center, it gives me files by activity type, and total and active sites. I can drill into some details, but kind of just some high-level reporting. Site management is the one that I think a lot of people are excited about, and they made a lot of changes to. I can now actually see all of my site collections. Those created by groups, those created by teams, which technically are still created with groups, but I can see all of those. And then it gives me some additional columns of additional details I can look at. I see all the primary admins, whether it's a user or whether it's the group owners. If it's a group site, all I see as the primary admin is group owners. So it doesn't tell me who's in the group owners, but it does tell me that it's a group site. It's that owner's group, the owner's group within the group. That is the admin. It gives me the last activity too, so I can actually sort now my sites, and I can see sites that maybe haven't had any activity in 2 or 3 years. Maybe I should go look at those. And then some additional columns. You can customize what you see, whether you want to see the URL, external sharing if it's on or off, if it's created by a group, how many files are in it, page views, a bunch of functionality and customizability around how you can sort, filter, see all of those sites. So it almost looks like just a SharePoint list where you, up in the upper right hand, you still have the views where you can drop down your views, look at different views that they have pre-created. You can add columns, sort, filter. Can't group by them yet.
Did they happen to add an export button so that you can pull this data out in a CSV and go ahead and report on it on your own?
Not that I see yet.
Awesome. Well, I didn't see that in any of the sessions either, so I didn't know if it was on the roadmap or if it was going to come along, but I think that's one of those things, right? So if I want to be able to report on my group sites, and one of the things that's missing here is like summaries and aggregations. So it's always been awesome in the past to have the ability to go out with, you know, PowerShell and pull all your group sites, but you would have to figure out things like storage consumption on your own. So aggregate storage consumption against my pooled storage and what's happening there and how are these things being doled out, right? So sometimes I don't care about activity. I care about other consumption metrics that are going to drive me into it. So it'd be nice to be able to kind of spin that data however you want.
Yeah. And somebody asked me the other day when we were talking about it, is there an API to get to this site list to like view last activity on the site? I don't know. I haven't heard anything yet. But there is, again, there are still some missing, so I can see storage used, but I have no idea what my tenant quota is. So I don't know of that used, how much I actually have left.
Well, you know, they giveth and they taketh away, because they used to show you that in the old admin center.
And so you're definitely going to want to spend time in both admin centers. Oh, another nice feature. If I click on any of these sites too, I now have a button to email my admins. So if I have an issue with a site, and I know what it is, but I don't want to go look in the group owners and pull them all out and send an email. I can just select the site and the site management, click on email admins, throw in a quick subject and add a message, and it'll email all the admins of that site collection. Kind of handy. And then if you go over to settings, all you have in settings is you can turn notifications on or off. So push notifications for changes to their SharePoint content. There's a button to turn that on and off. And there's a setting to turn the new experience for lists and libraries on and off. So that is, at this point in time, all that's in the new admin center is the site management, the reports, and then those two settings.
They're going to add some other stuff in there. So eventually you'll see device access. So a little bit around conditional access and the things that happen in there. And you'll also see sharing controls come in.
Yep.
So today you can go to like admin.onedrive.com, log in with your org ID, and you're ready to go with, you know, setting up some of those tenant sharing controls for things like OneDrive, but they want you to have the same level of kind of operational control in SharePoint without having to hop into 16.8 different places to see what's going on.
Yeah, and they're definitely going to have to bring stuff in there. Again, it's just the preview. They give you a nice big link up in the upper right-hand corner to try the new one, and a nice link in the lower left to go back to the classic, because like you said, you're missing all the hybrid stuff, the access controls, stuff like user profiles, your records management, your managed metadata term store, search controls, apps, sharing. None of that's in that new admin center yet. So I imagine over time, we'll just keep seeing more and more items pop up in the new admin center until you can make that full switch from the classic to the new one.
It's going to be a while, and you're still going to be doing PowerShell and CSOM and other things to do your reporting and get to where you want to be.
Yep, which is good, because I don't ever want to stop writing PowerShell. That's just fun.
You're a sick person. All right, let's move on and do one more here really quick. So HubSites was one of the bigger announcements that came kind of around content aggregation, has some look and feel changes, and some things with structured navigation. So why don't we talk about those really quick? So hub sites are a new capability, really a new site type. It lets you group n number of team sites and communication sites and kind of give them a solid hierarchy to roll up under, right? So I still have lots of site collections. This isn't a big site collection with a bunch of subsites. This is one site collection that's associated with other site collections. So I'm still in a very flat structure. But what they let you do is by having a hub site, I can associate a team site with that hub site. And that lets me start to do things like aggregations or rollups for things like team news across those. So let me go ahead and pull everything up. It introduces an out-of-the-box scope search that says, hey, when I search within this hub site, only show me results from the hub site and other associated sites. It brings unified themes. So if you think about like an intranet scenario, right? Maybe I have my primary intranet and then I have another site collection for HR, and I have another one for my marketing group, and you know, I have another one for IT to do their marketecture to the organization. But I want those all to have a cohesive look and feel. So you can go ahead and dictate that at the hub level, have it propagated out effectively to your team sites and communication sites that are pushed through there. And it also brings a unified navigation. So you can define one top level navigation, and then it's automatically inherited by all those sites. So you can continue to have that flat structure and operational control that comes from a site collection, right? It's a well-defined boundary for security in SharePoint. So you can continue to have that. But now you get this new ability to kind of bring it all together at a high level, still security trimmed and well-scoped and things like that.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite announcements. I like where they're going with it, what they're doing with it. We talked to Dan about it a little bit too when we had him on the show while we were at Ignite. And one question I meant to ask him that I didn't, and I don't know if you've heard the answer, is can you add a hub site to a hub site to create more than one level?
No.
Okay.
So you can't do that, and you can't associate a team site or a communication site with more than one hub site. So it's a one-to-one relationship there. So I can't have a team site that's associated with multiple hubs either in today's world. And that might be a little bit confusing, right? Because hubs could have different navigation structures, different themes, all that kind of stuff. So you still might have to do, say you're trying to build like a custom search experience to bring in, aggregate all that information together, you still might need to be rolling that on your own.
Yep. Although, while you can't do one site to multiple hub sites, it does sound like it's going to be very easy to move a site to a different hub site in the case that your company does a reorg. So if it's associated with one hub site, you can drop it from one hub site and then add it to a different one, which could be nice. No more using tools to move sites around if you need a reorganize them.
Correct. Yeah, it's going to be super easy to flip those things around, push them to where they need to be. It's really a super simple experience as it is today. Not as it is today, but from what they've kind of shown in sessions and blog posts and things like that, to go ahead and make those associations. So when you either create a new site or you edit an existing site, you're just going to have a drop down that says, hey, associate it with, you know, do you want to associate with the hub site, yes or no? And if the answer is yes, then you're just going to select that site and go from there. It'll be interesting to see if they can build in any other controls around that. So like if I have a structured, well-defined intranet, I'm not going to want every user who creates a new team site to be able to associate that with my hub site, right? Maybe because I just want that to be a well-defined thing. So governance will be a little bit weird in this scenario, but we'll see how it all comes out. This feature will not be released to first release until sometime in the first half of calendar year 2018. So H1 CY 2018.
Yeah. And I think I saw too, it's limited kind of along the same governance thing. It's limited to 200 sites and a hub site. So some bigger organizations, you definitely want to control that so that one person doesn't drop a 199 sites into your hub site.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how it comes out and ultimately how customers start to drive it into their use cases, or really what use cases they come up with for it, right? So a lot of the things from Microsoft were, you know, hey, let's take a marketing organization and be able to put that back together and maybe have like a sales org, research and development, things like that. Intranets, you know, I think there'll be a great use case for it, but it'll be very interesting to see what customers actually come up with.
Yeah, I can definitely see those use cases. IT, you have your server team, you have your network team, all of those, roll them all up into that IT hub site. Anyways, we'll see. 2018, put it on your calendar.
Be here before you know it.
All right. Well, I think that wraps us up. We're probably at about time, maybe even a little over. So we'll wrap it up and we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.